Hello and welcome to the Unplayable Podcast. My name is Josh Schonefinger, and on this episode we'll be checking in with Louis Cameron, who's on the ground in Colombo as Australia finish their ODI series against Sri Lanka and prepare for a two-match series to be played in Gaul. Welcome, Louis.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. I think we're at the halfway point of the tour time-wise on a six-week-ish long tour. And we've played more than half the game. So we've got one day. We're recording this on Friday morning, my time, Friday afternoon, your time back in Melbourne, and still haven't had the fifth one-dayer just yet. When you're listening to this, dear listeners, that one-dayer will have been played. So apologies we don't have the latest from that, but I feel like attention is squarely shifted to the Test series.
Yeah, that's right. And speaking of the Test series, your chat with Nathan Lyon is coming up right after we do a quick little wrap-up of the one-day series and a little preview of the Test series, so stay tuned for that. Now, Louis, the ODI series has been decided, even though there is still one match to play. Sri Lanka wrapped it up in the fourth match. Take us through your thoughts. You've been there in person. What's it been like at the matches? The crowds have looked incredible, but there's still a lot going on in the country, obviously.
Yeah, there is a lot going on in the country, and yes, the crowds have been incredible. And I think the best way I've kind of come to understand it is that it's an escape for people who are going through a really, really tough time in this country, Josh. Like, it's been a real eye-opener. Some of the things people are going through, you know, the most obvious one, the most visible one that you kind of see when you're on the ground here is the, you know, the fuel queues for hours and hours. Speaking to some of the people who take us to the ground every day for training and stuff, they've waited up to 40 hours for petrol, which is just heartbreaking, mate. Like, so it's just stuff that we can't kind of comprehend. But the one-dayers, they just love white ball cricket in this part of the world. Like, I think back home there's a bit of a sense of anticipation for this Test series to start. But over here it's like every game is sold out. It's people just want to see white ball cricket. And I mean, even the fact that it's such a funny one, because there's nothing riding on this series. Like, there's no Super League points, strangely, even though Sri Lanka could have really done with them, because they won't qualify automatically for the 2023 ODI World Cup. And Australia probably could have done with them too. But so it's kind of like all these things swirling around. But I guess for the Sri Lankan people coming to watch these games, they are definitely not meaningless.
Yes, as you said, 3-1 they're up at the minute. Australia has had a debutante in the series. Matthew Kuhneman played in the second ODI, and there's been a whole lot of spin sort of stuff happening on the Australian side of things. Quite a lot of Aussie spinners over there as well. Why is that? Give us the rundown.
Yeah, well, I think the pitches are increasingly taking more and more turn. So the pitch they used for the fourth ODI was the use wicket that they'd used for the third ODI. I think the Aussies were a touch bemused by that, given there seemed to be another wicket that was being prepared that that, you know, they might have thought might have been used for that fourth game. So it will be interesting to see what was used for that fifth game that will have happened by the time people are listening to it. From a spin point of view, yeah, I mean the story of the tour for Australia has just been the injuries across the board to batters, bowlers, all-rounders, spinners, the whole works. Ashton Agar missing games has kind of opened the door for Matthew Kuhneman, which he's impressed people just given how far back he's come. He only made his first class debut last year. He was the leading Shield wicket taker, and he probably would have last season just gone by, and he probably only played because Mitch Swepson finally kind of got his chance around the Test team. So that's been a really good one for him. I think he's in contention to play the Test as well, from what I can gather, that with the news last night that Glenn Maxwell's been added to the Test squad, the kind of bit that probably most people didn't see in that same release was that Kuhneman, John Holland and Todd Murphy are all staying on for the Test series. And, you know, they're not technically part of the squad, but, you know, they're a chance of playing. Kuhneman and Holland, I think Murphy, maybe a little bit further back just because he's a right-arm off-spinner and they've got Nathan Lyon. So the Aussies, I guess the other thing to add there is the Aussies are kind of saying that it's good that these wickets are getting prepared for the ODIs, these really turning wickets, because it's actually the perfect preparation for what they're expecting in the tests.
And, yeah, we should be expecting Gall to spin. Obviously, last time Australia were here in 2016, Sri Lanka made the most of those spinning pitches and won 3-0 in the three test series. Just if we can just finish up on the ODI series. Now, obviously, Australia haven't been winning too much, so there's probably not too many top performers to speak of, but the ODI World Cup is next year, and that's in India. So how do you think Australia's preparation for that is coming along? I mean, there have been a lot of injuries and stuff on this particular tour, but it's the same, you know, similar conditions to what they will experience in about 14 or 15 months' time.
Yeah, it's a good question, Josh, from an ODI World Cup point of view. I mean, that's still quite a while off, but it's hard to... I mean, on the one hand, this is a unusually strong limited overs team. Australia have been... limited overs squad they've been fielding. I mean, apart from Zampa, who's just had his first child, pretty much everyone else was here. And I guess the injuries have opened the door for a few people, but... Pat Cummins has probably been Australia's best bowler. He hasn't played every game. It's kind of been, he's been in and out. Maxwell had his moment, won Australia that game off his own bat in the first one day in Kandy. And then he, you know, hasn't been able to hit those same heights the next couple of games. So it's been disjointed. I think they're playing a slightly odd kind of balance of their team now with Cameron Green at eight for the last two games. Which I think is quite interesting. It's almost a bit of a throwback to the 2015 World Cup side when they had James Faulkner, who's probably a little bit further developed in his bowling at that point than what Green is. But Green's probably a slightly better batter. So it's that kind of really deep batting lineup that I reckon they're probably having a look at. And, maybe when they get to India next year, that's an option for them to, with all these all-rounders now, like Stoinis, who's got a side injury and's gone home, Mitch Marsh, who has had a calf injury and has just come back, and Green, if they get them all fit and playing in the same team, plus with Maxwell and Labuschagne who can bowl overs, that's maybe a bit of a different way that they could go about it. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of just, you know, performances, it's probably more been about Sri Lanka, really, to be honest, in terms of how a couple of their guys, like Kusal Mendes, has had a really good game earlier in the series. And then Nisanka and Asalanka, two kind of 23, 24-year-olds who have kind of probably not quite hit their heights until this series, have really, really shown for the Sri Lankans. So, yeah, it's been really good for a Sri Lankan white ball point of view, I think.
Now, we may have buried the lead a little bit. You said Glenn Maxwell has been added to the test squad, which will make a lot of people very happy. Does that mean he's in contention for the first test? I mean, it must, right?
100% he's in contention. Yeah, I think it was interesting, and I didn't really notice it until Travis Head got his hamstring injury and now appears in some doubt for that first test, that they didn't really actually have a specialist backup batter. Marcus Harris was omitted for this series. That was probably the headline, if you like, out of the test squad announcement a month or so ago. So you've got Mitch Marsh and Josh Inglis, who I guess are in contention. Whether Inglis is really, you know, I think as a backup keeper, he's a good option. Whether he's in contention as a specialist batter for the test side, I'm not sure. So you'd think between Mitch Marsh and Maxwell, they're probably the two gunning for that spot if Head can't get up. And then maybe, Marsh's play against spin has improved dramatically in white ball cricket, and he's spoken quite well about some of those changes he's had to make. But, you know, Maxwell was already there. Like, I think his greatest strength, I mean, all his seven tests have come on the subcontinent. This is where he is at home in some senses. So, he knows that, and I think the selectors and especially Andrew McDonald really, really rate that. So it's I would say if Head's not fit, Maxwell's probably the front runner to slot in. Where he would bat, I mean, the other part of this, you know, just thinking ahead, is that would leave a middle order of a lot of right-handers, with Smith, Labuschagne and Cameron Green already in there. Head was the kind of middle order left-hander they had. So, you know, maybe Carey could could come up and bat five, and then Maxwell goes to six or seven with Green, a bit like the ODI team at the moment. So that'll be a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah, and Carrick bats up the order for South Australia a bit, doesn't he? So it's not as if it's completely foreign conditions for him.
100%, yeah, and I think he's an excellent player of spin as well. And he's really made that five spot in the one-day team his own a little bit. So, yeah, I think it wouldn't be he'd be quite capable of it. You know, I'm not saying any of this is going to happen. I'm just, you know, this is just me kind of thinking ahead a little bit. But yeah, it's really interesting. And then there are also some interesting dynamics at play with how they go with the makeup of their bowling attack too.
Definitely. Well, let's just talk about that. Obviously, there are two locked in. You would have to assume the captain, Pat Cummins, and spinner Nathan Lyon. But if Mitchell Starc is finally fit to go, you'd think he'd be right to go as well. So that only leaves one spot. Do they go for the spin, the pace? What's your general feeling on that last position at this stage?
Yeah, I'd say Mitch Starc is you know, firming very nicely. Maybe not a certainty, but you know, pretty close to it. Like there's nothing wrong with him from the sense that he's bowling flat out in the net. And is, you know, looking really good doing it. Similar with Steve Smith, who I think I don't think he's going to play this fifth ODI, but he should be in no doubt for the test with his quad thing that he's had. So Stark's an interesting one. He sliced the finger on his bowling hand, on his left index finger, and he can kind of bowl and everything fine. He just can only do it with tape, and you're not allowed to come into the game with an injury like that, which is an interesting rule. So I think he's got the stitches out. I think it's just a case of him not wanting to open the wound back up in the one days by bowling 10 overs with the seam kind of cutting across it. But by the time the tests start, I think he'll be good to go. And then, yeah, as you kind of alluded to, that second spinner spot is an interesting one. I think Mitch Swepson, you know, he said it himself that he probably didn't bowl as well as he could have in Pakistan. And there were some really promising signs in there from there. But I think it was quite interesting. I think there was a sense that he bowled a bit too fast over there, that maybe he thought the pitches would spin a lot and that extra pace would be desirable. I think speaking to John Davison, a guy who coaches him quite a lot up in Queensland and also coaches Matt Kuhneman, he seems to suggest that faster pace might actually be the go for Sri Lanka, where pitches will turn a bit more. The consideration for Australia is finger spin is king in the subcontinent. Like a right arm finger spinner and a left arm finger spinner is generally how teams go about winning tests here. Wrist spin is not as popular. So, you know, Ashwin Agar, I think, being out for the first test is a bit of a spanner in the works for that, because he has test experience. He has a lot of limited overs experience. He would have been the front runner if they want to go down that path. Now it's about whether Swepson is a better option than the other two left-arm finger spinners they've got. I think that's kind of how it's shaping up.
Yeah, well, it's going to be very interesting to see where they go. I hope they go for Swepson, but let's see. Lou, any big predictions for the test series before we chuck over to the Lyon interview?
Yeah, I just think it'll be close. I don't think Sri Lanka will be able to roll over the Australians like they did in 2016, mainly because they don't have Rangana Harath, who's a world-class bowler. And they also had a guy called Dilraran Pereira, who bowled right-arm off-spin at the time, who was a real handful for Australia's left-handers in that series. Their bowling attack is really raw. They got a couple of quicks who did quite well against Bangladesh, who I think have maybe five or six tests to their name, Fernando and Rajitha, who are really promising but haven't played much, and their spinners haven't played much as well. So that's, you know, like this Australian team is very experienced. They've just beaten Pakistan. They've just won their first test series in Asia in a very long time. But the conditions are going to be a massive leveller for probably the underdogs in Sri Lanka. So It sets up a really, really fascinating series, in my opinion. I've got no prediction other than I think it will be, I think the, you know, it will be closely fought.
Great stuff. So that first test is in Gaul on Wednesday, the 29th of June. Don't forget to stay tuned to cricket.com.au for all the latest news, scores, video highlights. There'll also be interviews from yourself and the Qantas Runway Report, where you'll be running us through the pitch and the team selections, among other things. Louis, let's chuck over to your chat with Nathan Lyon now. Do you want to give us a little intro?
Yep, I would. Really great chat with Nathan Lyon. We talked about the 2016 tour of Sri Lanka quite a bit, some of his work with Mattia Muralidharan, which I found really, really interesting. Some stuff from Rangana Harath on the advice he gave him after that 2016 series, and just how he's approaching bowling on the subcontinent, and as well some of his longer-term goals and this team's longer-term goals. So here's the chat with Nathan.
Nathan Lyon here. You're listening to the Unplayable podcast.
Coming back from Pakistan, and what have you been up to since then? Has it been a quiet time? Has it been a busy time working on your fitness? Talk us through what it's been like.
It's been really enjoyable, to be honest. Being able to spend a lot of time at home and like spend it with family and friends and have Easter at home and with kids and Emma and get away to Perth and catch up with family over there, which has been really nice. But then in lead up to this, it's been really enjoyable. It's been a lot of hard work behind the scenes with Tom Carter, who I've got nothing but praise for, who's really helped me from the start of my career to now. So it's been a lot of hard work. Hopefully it'll put me in a good position here to come out and do my skill.
Was there something involving a heat chamber in all this fitness prep?
Yeah, did a heat chamber, a couple of heat chamber sessions of a little box where it's 38 degrees temperature and high humidity, and it's not very enjoyable, but pretty similar to what we're experiencing right now.
In all seriousness, does that factor into it? You know, you're coming to a pretty humid, hot place. Like, is that specific preparation for heat?
Yeah, definitely. It's not something that I'd do every week. But yeah, it's when looking here, even watching a couple of the first T20s and seeing the boys visually hot, it's only going to get worse during the day as well. So it's something that Tom and I spoke about, trying to come accustomed to this kind of type of conditions as much as we can back at home. So something that we spoke about and put in play, and hoping to see the rewards.
Do you call it career best fitness?
Not far off it. To be honest, I haven't really gone up or gone down too far. It's always been quite constant with my fitness, I dare say. Hopefully stay injury free, and that's been something that I've been pretty proud about throughout my whole career, to be honest.
So fitness isn't the first thing people think of when they think of off-spin bowling, but I mean, when you think back to Pakistan, you were racking up a lot of overs, and you have on previous tours. Is it a bigger? Is that a myth that fitness isn't important for spinners?
Oh, 100%, it's a myth. I think it's a very crucial part in being able to perform. It's all well and good to be able to bowl four overs and be at the top of your game, but if you can do it potentially 20 overs or more a day and go back-to-back days, I think it's going to really show and really hopefully put your team in a really good position if you can play a role. So yeah, fitness is a big thing and a big focus of trying to be strong at the crease, because one of my big things with my bowling is actually being really strong at delivery and being really explosive. But that's only going to help as well within fielding, etc. as well. So yeah, fitness does play. Obviously, we're not as strong as what the fast bowlers are, but we definitely have to be fit, that's for sure.
So what are these next 10 or so days leading into that first test in Gaul? What's important for you in that lead up?
Really to nail down the skill set that's really important over here. Had a really good session bowling to Josh English yesterday in the nets for an hour, just one-on-one, which was really good. We'll do that tomorrow with hopefully Uzi and Smithy. And Ingo batting, but yeah, I think it's just really getting used to the conditions and understanding what we need to do, and try and think on our feet while we're here, and try and think outside the box a little bit, which I don't think we've done in the past here.
Interesting. Thinking outside the box on that note, I noticed an interesting short leg drill going on at training a couple of days ago. Can you talk us through what was that was about?
Yeah, so we had the AFL football out, and it was just really had Trav head at silly mid-off and Marnie at bat pad, and it was just, trying to hone in on those skills because we understand how important these positions are, and it's, I have fielded there two fast bowls, but I'm never going back there because it's not up my alley. But it's so important in there, and we're not expecting them to catch everything because it's a bloody hard job in there. But if we can turn little half chances into a full chance, then that's what we're after. And so little drill with me throwing the ball to Ronnie with the football ball, and it's just popping off a little bit. And it's that hard to practice bat pads when it's, you can kind of read the play, but with the footy we've found that we can get a little bit more variation in it.
And fair to say Andrew McDonald was probably enjoying it the most out of any of you guys.
No, certainly I was trying to hit him in the shin, I think it's a really good training drill, to be honest with you. I haven't seen it done before like that, so that's something that we'll be moving forward with, I reckon, because, and I'm more than happy to throw it if it means that we're getting in really good positions for the bat pads.
And just picking up on what you said there about thinking outside the box and maybe that not being done on previous tours, can you kind of explain what you mean by that? What happened on previous Asian tours, I presume you're talking about, and what's happening now?
I think it's just from learning, to be honest with you. It's not that we didn't do them. I think we probably did them, but it probably did them late in the game. It's more me thinking about different fields, different tactics over here. How can I potentially play on someone's ego with the bat if I have a certain field position? So that's all I mean by that. It's not really changing our skill sets or doing anything like that. It's more potentially little field placements here and there that can play a big role in different things.
Speaking of previous tours, I want to dive in a little bit on that 2016 tour of Sri Lanka, because it seems like it was a bit of a watershed moment for you in particular. It's been interesting reading back about that series, and I think after the first or second test, Borf and Smithy said that you need to hit the stumps more. When you kind of reflect on that now, and think about all that went into that, how do you reflect on that?
It was a tough tour. It's a tough tour that we weren't playing well, or well enough to compete, really compete and perform well in these conditions, which was probably really frustrating. But looking back at that, it's been a great learning curve, and it's able to put me in a really good position to prepare mentally when we come here in the subcontinent. So I've really taken a lot out of that, and something that we can really, hopefully I'll be able to pass on a little bit of knowledge to the younger spinners, whether that's Swepson or whoever it may be, Ash, depending if he's fit, moving forward, and on how we may want to go about these things. Tough tour, but a great learning curve, and really has really helped me through my career.
And as someone who's that success that you've had in Australia, you're a really strong advocate of, you know, spinning up the back of the ball. Was that the first time you considered that maybe that you might need to find a different method when you're not playing in Australia in terms of that technical thing?
I still believe in spinning up the back of the ball, and that's no matter where it is, and that's purely off myself believing that my skill is good enough to perform wherever it is in the world. So having that self-belief, but what's come to me in my turn, this is purely my turn, is the ability and willingness to bowl ugly. And that's only me talking about my bowling and how I can be more effective over here. So that's something that I will be trying to do, is looking to probably bowl a little bit more ugly than what I'm used to, which hopefully will put us in a decent position.
When you talk about bowling ugly, does that mean bowling at the stumps? Does it mean not getting that beautiful shape that you normally get, going away from that?
No, I think the stumps is always the stumps. That's the quickest way home. But I think it's different variations which don't really work in Australia. That potentially might be a round arm, might be totally undercutting it. Just slight little wrist positions behind the ball, side of the ball, etc. So that's my terms of bowling ugly. So for everyone watching, don't think you're going to have to go out and bowl ugly, fall in love with the stock ball. But I think that's the biggest thing for me, is being willing to bowl ugly over here.
But was that something that Harath did in 2016?
What Harath did was just owned his spot and owned his skill and understood if he put it. I've had a conversation with him after this test series and I said, what do you do that I don't do? And he said, I know, I put the balls in one spot and you blokes will stuff up. That was the exact words. And so that's a pretty simple mindset. And I took out of it and go, okay, test cricket, the secret to everyone's success, if you can challenge their defence for long periods of time, you'll be able to create chances. So, and that's what he did extremely well. He challenged our defence for long periods of time and he got the reward.
And did you pick up some stuff from Murali in 2016 as well?
Yes, Murali. And I was only talking to George Bailey about this the other day. I actually come over to Sri Lanka on I come over by myself and train with Murali for a week and I got a lot out of that. And I'm trying to think of the years. I'm thinking of potentially 2013, so pretty before that. But yeah, talking to Murali, it's not me trying to bowl like him. It's more a mindset thing, and I think I've been able to really learn off so many people around the world. But Murali's mindset was pretty unique. And like I said earlier today, I sat down with Chandika, our New South Wales batting coach, about former Sri Lankan player and coach, purely about mindset, how do the subcontinent players, how do they think? So it's been a really, really interesting learning, I guess.
Do you, when you came over in 2013 or wherever that was with Murali, did you come over by yourself? What were the, can you paint a picture of that trip?
Yeah, John Davison and myself come over here and trained. I think there could have been some younger NPS guys at that stage, young batters. I can't recall, but I just, for 4 to 5 days, just a week, train with Murali, batted against Murali, bowled with Murali for 2 to 3 hours a day. So it was pretty remarkable spending time with him here in Sri Lanka, where he's probably the greatest Sri Lankan cricketer to ever play the game, well, definitely the greatest bowler. So yeah, it's pretty interesting.
And he was still bowling at that point.
Yeah, he was still rolling them out, and it was pretty impressive, pretty challenging to face him. I can understand how he's taken so many wickets.
I think you got asked this earlier today about that Sri Lanka tour, about it potentially being a turning point. So before and including that series, you took 42 wickets at 40, about 43 in Asia. Since then, you've taken 65 wickets at 26. Was it a turning point?
Well, yeah, if you read those numbers, it is, isn't it? I can't sit here and disagree with it. I don't know the numbers. But, yeah, it's interesting to hear those numbers, that's for sure. But I think, as I keep saying, it's been a massive learning curve. And I think you get older, you mature more, you understand what your role is and probably get a really clear plan on how to really perform that role. What's that, 4 to 5 years into my career now, sitting here 10, 11, 12 years on, I'm a different person, different bowler, that's for sure.
And I imagine a lot of the batters would say that as well, Nath, like in terms of where they are now compared to 2016, that was identified as a bit of an issue, right? That you guys weren't making enough runs on that tour. Are you more confident 6 years on that you've got a group that has the game to succeed here?
Yeah, definitely. I think the self-belief is here, which is incredible. It's not going to say we're going to come out here and play the best possible cricket. We're going to aim for that. But I think having that tour of Pakistan, having that belief of being in the contest for 15 days and playing some really decent hard cricket, I think it's really put the test group in a really good position. But then you look at, you got Davey, Usman, Smithy, three of the top six who are very experienced players, and they've been here. They were on this tour of 2016. Uzi was here in 2011 with me. They've played enough cricket into subcontinent to understand. Yes, they're going to have a ball in their name at some stage. That's the nature of the game here in the subcontinent. But runs is a big key here, and it's just building partnerships and doing the basics really well, because it's going to be challenging. But I think the belief is here, which is really, really positive.
Longer term, Nath, it's an interesting 12 or so month coming up after that in terms of an India tour, a potential World Test Championship final, and an away Ashes tour as well. You've never won any of those in your career. Have you thought about those things coming up?
Yeah, bloody oath. Bloody oath. They're up there with the biggest goals for me is winning. Retain the Ashes is unbelievable, and I think that's a pretty big feather in your cap, but winning in India would be one of my biggest goals, because I forget when Australia's ever done that. And winning in Ashes, back-to-back Ashes, to hold the Ashes over there twice in a row would be pretty special. And obviously with Brendan McCullum jumping on board with Stokesy, they're playing a really positive brand of Test cricket, as we're seeing. So they're going to provide a different challenge to what they provided us at home this year or last year. But the next 12 months is massive. So there's some big goals there, that's for sure.
And on that India tour specifically, that'll be your third Test trip there, I think. And it might be the last for a lot of you guys if it's, you know, every 4 or 5 years. Do you think it's your best chance?
You write me off, eh?
So it might be for some of you. How old are you, babe? 30?
I don't know. Well, yeah. I'm 35 in November.
Is it your best chance, I guess, is my question.
I think it will be our best chance when you look at our current Test squad as well. Obviously, if everyone keeps performing and playing their roles, can't see many changes, to be honest with you. I think that's probably a really big strength within the Test team at the moment, is that it's been a consistent squad pretty well for the last number of years, and we've been performing well, and we're on the road to our goal is to become a great Australian Test team, and we're far from that at the moment. We're heading in the right direction, but I think having that same group is only going to give us a really good opportunity to perform over in all around the world, but especially get back one couple in India, which they beat us at home, which doesn't sit well with me.
Mm. So you bristled a bit when I said that it could be your last tour there.
Realistically, yeah. How many years in between each tour?
Four to five.
There's no end in sight for me, to be honest with you. I'm probably hungrier than ever to come out here and play Test cricket around the world and perform. So, but who knows? Realistically, yeah, it probably will be a lot of us last tour to India, but who knows? I'm trying to hang on as long as I can if I'm playing the role and still loving the game.
And the World Test Championship final, it's a funny one because it's a new concept. Is it meaningful for this group?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. You look in the white ball players, all you want to do is win a World Cup or many World Cups or whatnot. This is the Test cricket version of a World Cup. So I was pretty disappointed to miss out on the final last year by some silly overrate rules, which is pretty frustrating. But I think if we're able to play some really decent cricket throughout this next, 6 to 8 months, then hopefully we'll be in that position to be there if it's at Lord's this year and go there and compete and aim to win it and celebrate after.
And you like that format every 2 years? Would you like to see it change at all?
No, I like it. It's probably the only way you can really do it, so you're able to play so many different teams. It'd be interesting if it was more a three-match Test Championship final rather than a once-off, because as you watch enough Test cricket, you can't win a game in a session, but you can lose at top things. So I think it would be quite interesting if it was over a three-match series in England, or one at the home venue, one at the away venue, one in Lords. Be something, a bit of travel involved, but not a bad concept in my eyes.
Very good, very good. Like it, mate. Thanks for your time.
Easy as. Yes.